Hi there, and thanks for joining us. On this week's episode of the podcast, we have decamped to Middleton because we have to talk about two of my favourite things, food and drink, which are featuring in the East Cork Food and Drink Festival taking place from the 1st to the 8th of September. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
So where I am right now is going to be one of the focal points for the East Cork Food and Drink Festival. It is Sage Restaurant in Middleton, and I'm joined by the chef, the boss man here, Kevin Ahern. Kevin, how are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm not too bad. You bring me to a lovely restaurant where the smell of food is getting to me now, so I'm getting hungry even without having sampled anything you have here. What is Feast?
So Feast is a food and drinks festival, I suppose, with a festival that's trying to give a sense of place here in East Cork. It's a platform for the food and drink businesses in the area to showcase what we have to offer in this area. And I suppose most importantly, the biggest thing is it's a festival for the community, for the people of East Cork, to enjoy, you know, nature's larder and what we have.
You have loads down here. I mean, the place is dripping with quality food, isn't it?
Yeah, like, we're very lucky in this part of Ireland. We have so many food and drinks businesses that are quite different to each other and quite unique to each other. So I suppose Feast is a really good, as we said, a good platform for them to showcase it.
So how long have you been operating here in Sage? When did the restaurant open?
We opened here in 2008. So we're here now 12 years in February. Started quite small. It's kind of excelled and grown throughout the years. We started off with just one restaurant. Now we have two, so we have a casual and quite fine dining at the same time. It's been a good 12 years.
Yeah, and in that 12 years, you've grown from being a little place off a side street to, as you say, two venues here. Now, you're still kind of young to have a business that big that survived this long. I mean, do you ever wake up and go, yes, we're still going?
I think most people, probably 95% of people in the food and drinks industry, will tell you that it never gets any easier. In fact, we were just having that conversation where you constantly have to be working, diversifying, working on your product, working on your bottom lines, you know, taking feedback from your customers, always looking towards the future and not resting on your laurels, because it's not an easy game that we're in. But I suppose it's the labour of love that really keeps us going in this industry.
People's tastes change a lot, don't they? I mean, I'd imagine the restaurant menu here has changed considerably in that 12 years, because there's an evolution, not just in people's taste buds, but their expectations. If they're parting with money on a night out, you have to give them what they want.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose that's one of the things we learned throughout the years. That's why we have two restaurants now in one location. We have the Green Room, which is open all day long. It does breakfast, lunch and dinner. It's quite casual, easy going. It's one of those places, you know, the music is turned up a little bit louder. It's more of a fun element, kind of a dining experience, whereas Sage then itself is it's based on the 12-mile rule. You know, everything is reared, grown and produced within 12 miles of the restaurant, and I suppose it's more destination dining. It's more modern, fine Irish dining. It's kind of unique to where it is.
You kind of glossed over the 12-mile rule there. What?
Something that's evolved for us from year to year. The 12-mile rule came in 2011 when we just kind of decided to give ourselves a defining line, what we felt local really was. And I suppose we wanted to give the restaurant a real identity to what it is. So it's a modern Irish restaurant that sources products from within 12 miles. And we cook things simply, but we're trying to be a little bit, we try and be creative in what we do. And the menu changes could change from day to day, dishes change from week to week, from season to season.
But I mean, if you're doing the 12-mile rule, you're very seasonal in what you can actually put on the plate, aren't you?
So
I mean,
yeah, we're extremely seasonal.
There's none of your fancy stuff here from the south of France. Everything has to be grown within shouting distance of Middleton.
Yeah, but I suppose it's what's very important as well is that, you know, we don't tell any lies in what we're doing. If something isn't from 12 miles, we let you know it's not from 12 miles. Not everything is from 12 miles. Now, that could be done. It is possible to do it, but we have found throughout the years that there is just some products that we do want to have on the menu. They will be sourced as local as possible. They will be Irish. Obviously, the wine, things like that, some beers, salt, pepper, they don't come from within 12 miles. But so anything that can be reared, grown or produced from within 12 miles, we try our best to get it on the menu.
So now that you have the restaurant established and you've everything, you've a clientele built up, what's next? I mean, you're constantly thinking of the next thing. Is there anything happening in the wider restaurant world that you're thinking, well, we could do that?
You might have to rephrase that one. I suppose one thing I do myself, I suppose I do a good bit of consultancy for other businesses that want to, I suppose, upskill their chefs and, you know, upskill their mentality into sourcing correctly and changing their menus, bringing freshness into their businesses. That's something we do here. Also, I suppose Feast takes us probably 40% of my time. Sage takes up 50% of my time, and 10% is doing the other work items. But
not to mention the fact you have a young family as well. Just to throw that into
the mix. Yeah, we have a young family as well, which is all healthy, thanks be to God. But
so Feast, then, why did you bring this together? What was the rationale behind this? Because it was just as easy not to do it. So why did you go ahead?
So it was the Middleton Food and Drinks Festival for 15 years, and it was. It was a great festival, very well attended. Everybody, something that everybody really enjoyed, the community really got together on. But we just kind of felt as a collective, there's a few of us involved, Radine, my wife, who was also involved, and there's a few people around the town who were also involved in the festival. And we just kind of felt as a whole that it's much easier to market East Cork as an area as opposed to just Middleton on its own. And what we wanted to do was get the greater community into the area as well, to kind of work together as one, to showcase the area as one.
So what is your favorite thing on your menu right now? I mean, again, chefs taste their food constantly to make sure it makes the grade. What's the one thing you're particularly proud of here? Because the smell is getting to be here. It really is getting to be, Kevin. What would I go for if I was picking something off the menu?
We always start with, we give everybody like an amuse-bouche or a little taster when they come in. And everyone starts off, we do a fermented potato pancake. So basically we salt the potatoes.
You get drunk on a potato pancake?
Yeah, we basically bake the potatoes in their skins, and then so it's nice and dry, and then we mash it, we add 2% salt, and we put it somewhere for about 30 degrees for about 3 or 4 weeks. What helps then is that it ferments, so it gets a nice kind of a bitter flavour to it. And then what we do is we make a pancake out of the potato, and then we do different fillings in the potato than pancakes. Okay. So everybody gets some when they come in. So it's like a fancy kebab, basically.
It's a fancy kebab. Yeah. Made of spuds.
Made of spuds, yeah.
Good East Cork spuds.
Good East Cork spuds. Good 12-mile
spuds.
We
wish you the very best of luck with Feast. We've got two other really exciting guests to speak to here as well. Yeah. But for now, Kevin O'Hearn of Sage in Middleton, thank you very much for joining us on Red Business.
Thank you very much.
Red Business. All that's best about business in Cork.
Next up, we're going to talk about drink. It's not just food that's going to feature in Feast. They're also going to look at the very best locally produced alcohol, of which there is a fine quantity down in the East Cork area. Justin Green is of Bertha's Revenge Gin and Ballyvillan House. Justin, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
First question, who or what is Bertha? And why is she so angry that she wants to wreak her revenge?
Well, Bertha is the reigning world's oldest cow. Well, she's now gone to God, sadly. She passed away in 1993 at the remarkable age of 48. And she is the world's oldest cow, and it's been certified by the Guinness Book of Records.
How old is the cow?
She was 48.
That's a good age.
It's an incredible age for a bovine. And she also had an eye-bulging 38 calves, which is where the revenge comes in. So if you'd given birth 38 times, you'd be an angry cow and be seeking revenge on everyone and everything.
Well, she has been immortalised now in gin form. So tell us how you got into the area of gin production.
Well, we have a country house very near here from Middleton called Ballyvillan House. It's a historic house, and we operate it as a B&B, very authentic. And our business is great in the summer, but winter is always tricky. And, you know, it's very seasonal. And in rural Ireland, you know, you haven't got those big population centres close by. So we're always looking for opportunities. And we were watching the rise and rise of premium gin across the pond, you know, over the last sort of 10, 15 years. And we thought we'd have a look at it. And my business partner, Anthony, who's a school friend of mine, and I went over to London, and we just had an epiphany. We couldn't believe it. And we met lots of interesting distillers, and we did a tour of all the cocktail bars and interviewed, you know, cocktail barmen and people in the industry. And we decided we'd have a crack at it.
Gin was, it was almost a spent force that people didn't drink gin. There was a myth that it just used to make everybody miserable. And then somebody invented a big glass. As a result, gin became very popular again. Have you benefited from that resurgence in popularity?
Well, that's part of the reason we decided to distill gin and not whiskey or vodka or any or rum, for example. And yeah, there has been a global rise in gins across the gin sector has been very, very huge lately. And so that's something we wanted to felt we could get involved with and reflect very well on our business at the house as well in terms of marketing. You know, it's a the house is very high end luxury product, and so is the gin a premium product, and it just ties in very nicely with each other.
You have to distill gin, so it's not something that happens overnight. You don't go to bed and wake up with a bath full of gin. So how did you set about becoming an expert gin distiller?
Well, we wouldn't call ourselves experts yet. We're still learning, and it has been a steep learning curve, but we've had a lot of help from a lot of good people along the way, namely Peter Mulryan, who owns the Blackwater Distillery. He's a neighbour of ours, and we were trying to enrol in a distilling school, but they just didn't exist at the time when we started out, when we formed our business in 2015, and the only option was to go to the UK or the US, and that just wasn't feasible. And so Peter took us under his wing, and I hope we weren't too much of a pain in the backside, but he didn't tell us to get lost, and he was very good to us and gave us the basic building blocks and sent us away, and we spent 9 months developing our recipe, and then, you know, we've built it on from there, and every single batch we taste and tweak, and you know, for us the most important thing is the flavour, you know, and people won't come back for more if it doesn't taste good.
Well, this is true, and again, there's enough bog standard stuff out there that is forgettable, and I'm just looking at the samples in front of me here. You respected the number one rule of red business, which is bring a sample. So you have Irish milk gin and sloe gin. Now, I understand what sloe berries are and I understand what milk is, but the connection to gin is beyond me. So first of all, the Irish milk gin, is there a little bit of banya thrown in there, or how do you do it?
Well, it's actually our base alcohol is derived from milk. It's whey alcohol. 90% of gin distilled in Ireland and the UK would use a grain neutral spirit, which is mainly wheat, sometimes barley, and we actually couldn't get any Irish grain spirit. It's just not available commercially. It's all used in the whiskey industry, and most distillers would use a grain spirit imported from France or Eastern Europe. It's very good quality, but because so many ingredients in gin are imported anyway, such as, you know, juniper and all the spices and citrus, we wanted to try and incorporate as many locally sourced ingredients as possible. And then we were recommended the whey alcohol by a distiller in London, and it's produced very near where we live, and just outside Cork City, and it's super quality, and it's Irish, and it's produced by, you know, milk is sold.
So in other words, we were talking with Kevin about the 12-mile rule. It looks like that Bertha's Revenge respects the 12-mile rule then, does it?
Well, where possible. As I said, there's not much lemon trees or orange trees growing around my neighbourhood, so we have to import, you know, citrus from Spain and North Africa, but the whey is local. We pick a little peppery seed called Alexanders, and at this time of year they're all ripe, so we're out 2-3 times a week picking Alexanders. We have to pick a whole year's supply, and that's an ingredient.
And I'm presuming you do the same for sloeberries, which are just about to come into season as well. So are you poised and ready to go get as many sloes as you can for your next batch of sloe gin?
Oh, for sure, but the quantities we're producing, we also have to buy some in. You know, we're not able to pick enough wild berries for the quantity we are producing. So there is an element of wild Irish sloes in there, but there are also some imported sloes.
The funny thing is, gin for me is always a clear liquid, whereas the sloe gin appears to have a bit of a colour to it. I mean, is that rare?
Well, the sloe is a wild plum, so it's got a very deep red colour, and we steep the berries in our gin for up to 6 months, and then we add sugar at the end. So it's an infusion rather than a distillation, and it's the extra sugar at the end gives it that added sweetness, and then the Bertha botanicals, we use a lot of Indian curry spices like cardamom, cumin, cinnamon and cloves in our gin, and that all comes through the sloes beautifully.
I'm fascinated that you didn't know a single thing about gin up to a couple of years ago,
well,
apart from the odd
about drinking gin.
Yeah, but exactly.
But not distilling it.
Yes, drinking it and distilling it are very different. It never ceases to amaze me how business people can evolve as their business evolves. And you're a prime example of that. There you had fantastic high-end venue for weddings. Obviously, the people weren't staying there as much as they would have when the weddings weren't on, so you needed to reinvent yourself, and now you're a gin expert. Are you amazed at your own ability to learn?
Absolutely. And, you know, we put a lot of hard work into it, and, you know, we did a lot of research, a lot of reading up, talking to people. And, you know, as I said, every batch we make, we taste and tweak and constantly trying to improve. And we're bringing in a consultant in shortly just to look at our processes and help us bring it on to a new stage and develop a few new lines. And so it's constantly a learning process.
Where's the best place this is available that you're aware of?
Well, apart from Ballyvillan House, I would have to say Sage Restaurant in Middleton, where we are sitting now. They've been very good to us, and you know, and I love their ethos of supporting local producers, and we very much employ that philosophy at Ballyvillan House as well. There's lots of great places to have enjoy Bertha, but at home I think is probably as good a place as any with someone you love, and we recommend a B&T, which is with a good quality tonic, slice of orange peel, and sip it enthusiastically.
Well, I mean, I've never drank anything without sipping it enthusiastically. Look, it's a fantastic product. How's the hotel business? I mean, I know it's not really a hotel, it's a high-end house, a country house. Is that business still doing well? Because people are spending now again, you know, there's obviously concerns about Brexit and so on, but is that business doing as well as you'd want it to?
We had a very slow start to the season, and that was pretty typical of the hotel sector in Ireland. You know, May, June were very quiet, and even places like Killarney were surprised how quiet it was. But July and August have kicked off and been very, very busy, which we are pleased to say. It's going to be very busy now until middle of September, and then when kids start heading back to school, it gets very quiet again. So we're really working off a 3-4 month year busy season. The winter months, weekends only, you know, we don't even open during the week unless there's a group coming in, and we're always happy to open when we can. And that, as you said earlier, is one of the reasons we decided to look at the gin project, because we're really focused on export now, and we have revenue coming in 12 months of the year. We're not reliant on a small domestic Irish market or tourism seasonality.
Okay, well, diversify or die, as they say, and you diversified in a way that you get to drink gin every day. So that is something that most people can relate to. Justin Green of Bertha's Revenge Gin and Ballyvillan House, very best of luck for both of your endeavours, and thank you for joining us on Red Business.
My pleasure, thank you.
The only show in town for Cork business, Red Business.
So we need a little bit of accompaniment to go along with the gin. So the recommendation was orange, but I'm sure if we were very sophisticated, we could find a nice cheese to go with it as well. So my next guest timing is impeccable. From Ballinrostig Organic Cheese, Michelle Cashman, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you for joining us. So what do you make? I mean, organic cheese sounds very nice, but it has to be special. So what's special about your cheese?
Yeah, so it's it is an organic cheese, which is special, but also we make a Gouda, which is made from Jersey cow milk, so very, very creamy Gouda. We source our milk from a local organic farmer, Dan and Anna Hearn in Dungourney. So again, all very locally sourced. And so we make basically Gouda style cheese. We make some herb versions, a smoked version, and then we have a matured version now as well that's coming online that's really good.
A friend of mine makes cheese for a living.
Yes.
It is a horrifically messy business. I've never encountered anything that is labour intensive.
Yeah.
How did you end up making organic cheese?
Yes, so my husband Stephen is originally from Holland, so he grew up, you know, watching his grandmother making cheese, and you know, in a very deep, you know, culture of cheese making there. And he made cheese there, and then when he came here to Ireland, which is over 20 years ago, he did various other jobs. But his passion was always cheese making. So 3 years ago, he started it as a hobby, and you know, I knew once he started, we'd be doing it professionally.
Because hobbies are very dangerous things.
Yeah.
What was he doing prior to being a cheesemaker?
Oh, he was a tree surgeon, and he was a nurse for many years as well.
So they are very different to cheesemakers. What did you do before you got involved in this business?
I was in the corporate world. I was a human resource manager for 20 plus years.
Now, again, so not conducive to cheesemaking. So
no.
Therefore, I mean, what possessed you? What did you have too much gin one evening and you decided to make cheese?
Absolutely too many wine conversations. But I suppose he always had a passion around it. And actually, all he ever did, he does relate because he's very technically minded, and anything he does, he goes deeply technical in it. So, you know, I always had confidence in his ability to produce the product. But yes, as you say, it's hugely labour intensive. It's a very challenging business. And the food business generally, you know, the local organic and the local sourced food business is a challenging one, you know.
We do a lot of dairy cheese in this country.
Yes.
With massive factories, it's a major export, but yours is a more specific product. So who is the ideal end user for you? Is it the cheese connoisseur, if you will?
Not really. I mean, we sell primarily on farmers markets and also to restaurants like Sage and that kind of thing. But so our ideal end user, I suppose, is somebody who appreciates the artisan nature of our product, you know, and who will therefore obviously pay the price for it, but also, you know, just to appreciate it. But we have customers, we have 3-year-old kids who pull their parents over to buy it. You know, they love the creaminess of it. So we love that as well, you know, the whole variety of people who come to the farmers market. But I suppose, I guess, essentially those people are self-selecting as well. They want a certain type of product as well.
We are a little bit conditioned. You know, cheddar cheese was the only cheese available for a long time, and other so-called fancier cheeses weren't necessarily for the Irish palate. But we're kind of getting over that, aren't we? Which is good timing for you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, generally, I mean, of course, we have all sorts of nationalities who buy our cheese. But, I mean, Irish people are very open, you know, in terms of food, and they will try things, and you can you can explain things and describe things to people, and once they taste the Gouda, they realize it's kind of a longer tasting cheese, we'll say, than the cheddar. So you know, they enjoy it, and it isn't unrelated anyway. You know, it's not a really, you know, exotic cheese or anything, but so it's, you know, it's very usable for kids in sandwiches as well as for people at dinner parties.
Now, you've literally just come from a farmer's market in the last while, so this is a hands-on business. There is literally no rest for the wicked, is there? You're constantly, if not making cheese, selling cheese, and marketing your cheese. Is it how you expected your life to be at this point?
That's a good question. So it is. It's literally 7 days a week. We have to turn the cheese, for example, every day, you know.
How do you do that? Is there a brush handle, or how does it work?
No, we literally, there are 5K cheeses, and we pick it up off the shelf, turn it over and clean it.
Oh, you're actually physically lifting the cheese. Okay. Yeah.
So it's a very labor-intensive cheese. It's a very labor-intensive work. We're both, you know, on the right side. Well, I'm on the right side of 50. We're around the 50 now. So it is very...
That's a damning indictment of your husband, who's clearly over 50 there. Just mentioning that in passing.
Yeah, but it is. It's a very, very physical and challenging business, yeah. But it's fun. I mean, you're meeting people. You're doing... I suppose a lot of it is what we're doing. We do stuff that we believe in around values and local, and we use as little plastic, etc., as possible, and, you know, so we, I suppose that's why we were attracted to it in the first place.
And that's the funny thing, because we are looking at all of the events that are taking place in Feast. We were speaking with Justin, we were speaking with Kevin. That idea that this is sustainable, this is proud to be local, it's a very big thing amongst the food producers here in East Cork, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And I mean, the integrity of the food producers is incredible, you know, and we are a community, even though we all have our own businesses. And I suppose Feast gives us that opportunity as well to meet one another and to meet, you know, to meet the chefs and the restaurateurs, and also just the actual end consumer who care about that kind of thing, you know. So, you know, you always meet even a new customer, or you know, a new chef who hasn't heard about us, or that kind of thing. So that's the opportunity as well, you know.
I asked the same question of Justin. Where is the best place you've seen your cheese being served? And you walked in and you saw it written on a menu, or you saw it available somewhere?
Well, Justin is now just stocking our cheese, actually, so we're delighted with that. Yeah, we're delighted.
In Ballyvillan.
In Ballyvillan, delighted to be associated with that. Here in Sage, they've all, from the very start, have been a very very big supporter of ours. So, yeah, it's again, I suppose it really is a high-quality restaurant that will take our cheese, you know, not to sound snobby, but that is true, you know. And when I say that, I mean, a restaurant of integrity around local and around the product and around what they believe in.
And no more than just taste the gin every day to make sure the standards are sufficiently high. Do you have to taste the cheese every day?
We do, but that's not an it. No, we don't. But we do obviously have certain times that we do need to taste the cheese. For example, when we were maturing the Jersey milk cheese, which is literally only a year old now, we were tasting it, you know, after 6 months, 8 months.
And how long does it have to mature for before it's ready?
Well, the matured cheese that we're using now is a 12-month-old cheese. Yeah, so that was by taste, because we hadn't used Jersey milk up until we had turned organic. And it acts very differently, you know, because it's very high in fat and it's just a different cheese. And so we did have to taste it quite often to find it, to realise when it's right, that's the mature taste we were looking for, you know.
Okay, well, they say there's a few careers in all of us, and again, no more than our last guest, you're living proof of that. Michelle Cashman from Ballinrostig Organic Cheese, thank you so much for joining us. Feast is taking place from Sunday the 1st of September until the 8th. You can find a full list of all the events at feastcork.ie. My thanks to all of my guests and to Sage here in Middleton for playing host to us this afternoon. As I said, feastcork.ie, get all the details there. All episodes of Red Business are on redextra.ie. Niamh Hennessy produced, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.